Welcome back to the Power Hour. We're very excited for our next guest, someone new we haven't had on before, Sally Pipes. She is the President and Chief Executive Officer of the Pacific Research Institute, a San Francisco-based think tank. She also writes a bi-weekly healthcare column for Forbes.com, and she's written several books about Obamacare. One of them, I love these titles, The Cure for Obamacare, and a couple others, too. She's an absolute expert about single-payer healthcare. Sally Pipes, welcome to the Power Hour.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be able to join you.
Yes, very good. This we've seen politically something my grandfather would have never believed could ever happen in America. We've seen openly socialist candidates winning primaries, winning major races throughout the country. What are we looking at here? What is this saying?
Well, I think this really took hold back in 2016 when Senator Bernie Sanders was running against Hillary Clinton to get the Democratic nomination for the presidency in that election. He came out with his Medicare for All plan, which, of course, he never said how much it would cost or how it would be paid for. But this, although he didn't win the nomination, he has really moved forward with a Senate bill in 2017. He has 16 Democratic senators co-sponsoring his Medicare for All. There are 137 Democratic House members who are supporting this. There's a Medicare for All caucus with about 70 members. So I think he really got things going, and people started listening to these people like Bernie Sanders saying, we can provide all of these things to the American people, everyone, and it won't cost a dime. And so, you know, that sounds great. I think, you know, we'd all like to have, you know, free health care, free housing, free tuition, all of these things, but it just can't be done. And America is a country that was built. I came to this country because of I saw it as the land of opportunity, having left and the ability to leave Canada. And I think it's really a shame that we're seeing, you know, in Florida, an extreme liberal politician, Mr. Andrew Gillum, the mayor of Tallahassee, is going to be running on and against the Republican, and he's very much in favor of all of these socialist ideas, including Medicare for All. We saw as well, and it really started in June when Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, a protege of Bernie Sanders, defeated 10-term Democratic House member Joe Crowley in the 14th District in New York. That got the ball rolling, and Sanders and Ocasio-Cortez have been running around the country, you know, promoting these candidates that promote their agenda. And it's really going to be a disaster if these people take hold.
Let's talk about Ocasio-Cortez. She seemingly came out of nowhere, bartender. You know, she had this backstory that she concocted. Who is supporting her? Who is supporting these other candidates? Because you just don't win out of the blue these kind of races.
Well, I'm not sure. She didn't raise nearly as much money as Joe Crowley, but I think it's because of people like Senator Bernie Sanders really getting behind someone like her and really, you know, giving her the microphone. And then, you know, the mainstream media is so, you know, very much, for the most part, entrenched in liberal ideas that they have given her a lot of, and several of these other people, a lot of, you know, airtime. She's really become, at 28 years old, the darling of the mainstream media. And, you know, that free media, you know, gives a lot of people a lot of information.
Yes. Yeah, it gives it the air of legitimacy, even though it's completely illegitimate. You talked about single-payer health care. Let's get right to that. You brought up cost. What would single-payer health care cost, and then what would it look like?
Well, I think many people don't understand what single-payer health care is. It's Medicare for All. What it means is when there's a single payer, there would be one payer, the government. All private coverage would be outlawed. And I think when you see in all of these polls showing tremendous support for single payer, the latest one out of Reuters, Ipsos, shows that 70% of those people polled support single payer, the highest ever recorded, 85% of Democrats, 52% of Republicans. But they don't ask the subsequent question, well, how's it going to be paid for? And if you look at, you know, when Bernie Sanders had his plan in 2016, he never said what it would cost, how it would be paid for. But the Urban Institute, which is not a free market think tank, costed it out at $32 trillion over 10 years. Currently, we spend about $3.2 trillion on healthcare, and the whole you know, for the whole country. And then with his bill, Senate Bill 1804, Charles Blayhouse at Mercatus came out and said $32 trillion over 10 years. And even if income taxes and corporate taxes were doubled, it wouldn't be enough to pay for this type of program. And what it really means is when government is totally in control of your health care, like it is in Canada. Canada, where I'm from, is the only country in the developed world that disallows any private coverage for something that is medically necessary. The result is government can't afford to pay what everyone demands, so you have long waiting lists for care. The average Canadian today waits 21.2 weeks, over 5 months, from seeing a primary care doctor to getting treatment by a specialist. And it's not free. The average Canadian family of four pays $13,000 a year in hidden taxes for a health care program where they have to sit on a waiting list, and there's a shortage of doctors because doctors quit medicine because their payment rates paid by the government were so low they felt it wasn't worth being in practice.
Let's go backwards a little bit. Of course, Obamacare, he was a great emancipator or whatever you want to call it, to give people health care. Obamacare was the dream. Where are we with Obamacare now? Because it seems like it's dying, but where is it?
Well, I mean, it's still on the books. It became law on March 23rd, 2010, when President Obama signed it into law. And I think people need to realize that, you know, he had two main points. One was to lower the cost of health care, and B, to reduce the number of uninsured. Neither of those ideas that he had have been, those issues have been solved. But I think in the back of his mind, he really wanted a single-payer Medicare for All system. He talked about it in speeches to the AFL-CIO, and he knew, I think, in the back of his mind that this plan wasn't going to work. The Republicans ran in 2016 on a platform of repealing and replacing Obamacare, and I think that really helped Mr. Trump become the president. Unfortunately, the Republicans were not able to repeal and replace Obamacare in the summer of 2017 or in the fall. And a number of Democrats, you know, were saying, well, now, since it wasn't repealed and replaced, let's build on Obamacare. But when they realized they couldn't get any sort of, you know, buy-in from Republicans on what they wanted in terms of, you know, how to deal with pre-existing conditions, how to deal with these cost-sharing reduction payments, all of this, that they went completely to the other side to promoting an agenda of single-payer health care. And so that's where they're fighting now. Obamacare is still on the book. We've seen a number of important things happen under President Trump. His two executive orders are now rules, one which would allow short-term limited-duration plans, which don't have to comply with Obamacare, which could be you could buy a plan for 12 months, renewable for 3 years. Obama cut that short-term limited-duration plan down to 3 months when he was in office, so under Obamacare. So this is going to be – this is a very good plan for – particularly for young people that, you know, maybe don't have employer-based coverage, they're between jobs, they're looking for a job. It is catastrophic coverage. And here in California, where I live, you know, the legislature has passed a bill banning short-term plans, and we're waiting to see if the Governor Brown will sign it. He has till September 30th. The other thing is association health plans, which were part of Mr. Trump's rule. That is a law as well, so sole proprietors and small businesses can group together and have a larger pool and get affordable coverage. The third point is that under the tax reform legislation of last December, the individual mandate was repealed, and that would go into effect January 1st, 2019. So a number of positive things have happened, but Obamacare is still the law of the land. And I don't think, just listening to Senator McConnell today, since John Kyle is replacing Senator McCain in his seat, I don't think Mitch McConnell said he's not going to bring up a repeal bill in the short term. So Obamacare is the law of the land, but the Democrats are pushing, and they've got really, you know, from the left. Senator Sanders said the other day in an interview on CNN that the time, you know, has come for Medicare for All to be the way. It's what he believes, and so he's very much for it.
Let me ask you, you know, would it be presumptuous to say that Obamacare was kind of a gateway to single payer all along? Was this part of the ultimate plan here?
I think it absolutely was. I mean, you know, certainly people remember when just about 10 days before the bill was signed into law, Nancy Pelosi said, the House member and former speaker from San Francisco, we have to pass this bill so that we can find out what's in it. Well, we found out what's in it. High premiums, very high deductibles. A lot of people with metallic coverage plans can't even afford to use it because of high deductibles, small networks of doctors and hospitals. But I really do believe that, that the people behind this, including President Obama, knew it would fail, and they really wanted that the law. Their goal was Medicare for all, single payer. And now certainly, among all the progressives, that's where they're going.
Right up there with the earth is flat when it comes to made up stories from the Middle Ages is Obama saying, if you want to keep your doctor, you can keep your doctor. Yeah, okay, sure. We're talking to Sally Pipes from Pacific Research Institute, pacificresearch.org. It's a think tank. She also is a writer for Forbes. She's an expert about this. Obviously, she's passionate, well-informed. Sally, why are you so passionate about this subject?
Well, I guess because, you know, I grew up in Canada. I'm an economist. I worked at the Fraser Institute. And back in, the federal government had taken over the whole healthcare system in Canada in 1984. And by 1988, at Fraser, we started to see that, you know, there were cracks in the system. People were having a hard time finding doctors. The time to get an appointment, you know, was very long. So we started a publication called Waiting Your Turn, A Guide to Waiting Lists in Canada. And so, you know, by the time I left in 1991 to come down to California to run PRI, one of the big incentives was I wanted to get away from the Canadian healthcare system because I saw what was happening. And my own mother, who was a senior at the time, died from colon cancer because when she thought she had colon cancer and went to her doctor, her primary care doctor, he said, well, we'll take an X-ray. And so when she called me and said, well, they didn't discover it. They took an X-ray. And I said, well, you can't discover colon cancer with an X-ray. Get a colonoscopy. And when she called her doctor, he said, well, we can't get you a colonoscopy because we have too many people on the waiting list that are younger that have severe issues. So you can't have a colonoscopy.
Oh, my word.
6 months later, she'd lost 35 pounds. She was hemorrhaging. She went to the Vancouver General Hospital. Was in the ER for 2 days in the emergency room, 2 days in a transit lounge, waiting for a bed in a ward, and died. She got a colonoscopy, but died 2 weeks later from metastasized colon cancer. This is how you control healthcare costs. You ration care, and if government runs it, this is what they do. And we'll see that in the U.S. We'll see Canada has a shortage of doctors because, you know, when they're paid by their provincial government, and, you know, they're not paid, you know, appropriately for what they do. We'll see the same thing in the U.S. And a new poll just came out showing from the American Association of Medical Colleges that by 2030, we will have a shortage of 121,000 primary care doctors in this country. Because with Obamacare and then the thought of Medicare for all, doctors are quitting medicine, they're retiring early, they're going on to a different career. This is not going to be good for us as patients, as we saw, and I saw in Canada firsthand.
My word. You brought up the polls earlier that they want single-payer health care. I mean, the majority of Americans, it seems like, for these polls, I mean, they can't be that wrong, at least a big percentage, they want single-payer health care. We've seen open socialists in New York and Florida, what have you, are winning major seats, major positions in political party races. We have seen now the NFL take a social, quote-unquote, social justice stand. What is social justice? I've yet to see an NFL player in front of the camera tell me what they are looking for exactly, or what is wrong, or what needs to be corrected. Are you concerned now that we see Nike, these corporations, they're backing this whole campaign? They're basically backing socialism. That's how I look at it. From your perspective, think tank from Canada, what does this mean to you?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, this is a movement that is really upsetting. I mean, America was a country built on equality of opportunity. Remember Martin Luther King, we should be focusing on the content of our character, not the color of our skin. And, we're, you know, this this whole issue of identity politics is dividing this country so far. I just, you know, when I was in my youth, I played competitive tennis and still play and love the game. I don't play competitively, but I just bought my new tennis shoes and I went from New Balance to a pair of Nikes, and I feel like, you know, throwing them out because I think they are doing everything they can to destroy, you know, this country, the greatest country in the world, where it's a place where people from all over the world come. And, you know, 60,000 Canadians come every year across the border and pay out of pocket for health care that they find because they feel that the waiting time that they have to wait for is too long. And so what are these corporations like Nike trying to do to our country? Break it down so that we're all, you know, so multicultural. We're all sort of, you know, in individual units. We're not Americans. We're all, you know, Canadians or African Americans or whatever. And it's really going to lead, in my mind, to the destruction of this great nation.
What do you see? There's obviously a class of cultures, a class of ideas, the schools, the young people. Why is it that, you know, you being from a foreign country, somebody from outside who has lived through social policies, they find it much easier to recognize what's going on here in America? Why is that?
Well, I guess because when you've lived under something and it's not working, whether it was communism in Eastern Europe or the socialism of Canada, you know what it means. You know, America is a very wealthy country. So many young people, you know, have everything that they've ever wanted. It's being handed to them, you know, on a silver platter. And when I go and do debates at medical schools, it's absolutely astounding. It's usually myself against three people, doctors who are, you know, for Medicare for all. And the students in the medical schools have been taught by, as Milton Friedman would say, by professors who are not doctors in private practice, but they're, you know, teaching at universities. Their salaries are controlled by what the university is willing to pay. And they're all products of school systems that support socialism. So when you give ideas, as I'm talking about, educating Americans on what it means to have Medicare for all, students will snicker and laugh, you know, at what I'm saying, but they have no idea what this means for them because the professors are so committed to this idea. And even the American Medical Association, which really only represents about 18% of doctors in this country, has just moved from being, you know, anti-Medicare for all, single payer, to becoming neutral. And now Physicians for National Health Insurance, which is the overriding single payer doctors association, they've now set up a Students for National Health Insurance, and they have 1,400 members at more than 60 medical schools. So this is really, you know, a very upsetting trend, and it has to be, the American people have to be educated on what it means to their health care, because as my mom used to say, I hope you're not becoming an impatient American. Americans are impatient. If they want an MRI tomorrow, they expect to get it. They don't want to be told, well, you're going to have to wait 8 months to get an MRI and then additional time to wait to get an appointment with a neurosurgeon if you have a problem.
Oh, my gosh. We got about a minute or so left. Sally, it's really a pleasure to meet you. I hope you come on again, hopefully for longer, on other current news. We got, again, about a minute in conclusion. What would you like to say to America, who's listening, to the world? Now, America's considering the same thing Canada has. How would you conclude?
Well, I would say that this is not the way the American people want to go, where our healthcare system should go. We want to provide competition. America is a country built on competition. We want to empower doctors and patients, not the federal government. Just look at Canada, where private healthcare coverage is disallowed. Look at the United Kingdom National Health Service, long waiting lists for care, people dying on gurneys, people being in emergency ER 4 hours on an ambulance. It's ridiculous.
Well, Sally, I'm going to join you. I will never buy another pair of Nike shoes, and I love Nike. I will never buy there's other shoes I can buy. I will never buy another pair of Nike. Okay. Me and you, Sally, we're going to start here. God bless
you.
We'll talk to you soon.